Coming up on Fronteras, one of the biggest challenges in reforming the nation's broken immigration system is identifying people like this young woman.
I came to the U.S. when I was 14 years old. I came, like most people, on vacation to go to Disneyland. And after the 3 months, I stayed here.
Solving the problem of visa overstays. And the Navajo Nation is one of the most violent reservations in the country. The tribe has just opened one of four new jails to deal with all of the crime.
There's been a history of kind of a revolving door justice out there because of their lack of infrastructure and lack of jail space.
We look at how the tribe, along with federal agents and attorneys, are trying to take on the overwhelming crime. But first, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created via an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among seven public radio stations and funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting as part of its local journalism center initiative. I'm Crystal Chavez. Of over 11 million undocumented immigrants in this country, some 40% actually entered the U.S. legally. They came on a temporary visa. Trouble is, once they got here, they decided to stay. Tracking them down is one of the biggest challenges facing the Department of Homeland Security, as Monica Ortiz Uribe reports.
It all starts here.
Welcome to the U.S. Consulate General in Ciudad Juarez, Mexico. We are the largest visa processing post in the entire world.
If you live in Mexico or anywhere else in the world and want to take a vacation or study in the United States, the starting point is your nearest U.S. consulate. Here in Ciudad Juarez, the consulate can process up to 1,000 applications a day. Olga Bashbush is a spokeswoman for the consulate in Juarez.
People have to demonstrate what we call ties to their country of origin. If you're an adult, that you have a job here. If you're a student, that you're going to school, that you have family, relatives, you have some sort of life to go back to.
In other words, they want to be sure you'll go home before your visa expires. Last year, close to 9 million people received temporary visas to the U.S., like this college student originally from Argentina who came here 10 years ago.
I came to the U.S. when I was 14 years old. I came, like most people, on vacation to go to Disneyland, and after the 3 months, I stayed here.
She overstayed her visa and now lives in California. She asked we not use her name.
I began to be involved in school, participating in clubs, honor classes. I was in the tennis team. So I thought this was like a dream.
But not entirely. She can't legally drive or work, and unless she commits a serious crime, she's unlikely to get caught. Historically, the U.S. government hasn't aggressively pursued visa violators.
It's not surprising that a fair number of people thought, well, this is a way to come to the United States and continue to live in the United States.
Edward Alden studies immigration policy for the Council of Foreign Relations in Washington.
Immediately after 9/11, the concern about visa overstays is that it potentially could be a way for terrorists to come and remain in the United States. Several of the 9/11 hijackers had come on legal visas and then overstayed.
After 9/11, the Department of Homeland Security started programs to prevent potentially dangerous foreigners from getting a temporary visa. Other programs attempt to better track foreigners. For example, the U.S. Visit Program collects biographical data and fingerprints from foreign visitors. According to Alden, the program is fairly successful at tracking arrivals and departures from airports, but land crossings are another story.
Y'all came together, your grandpa and your two uncles? Y'all came together?
At the southern ports of entry, like this one in El Paso, customs agents document the entry of all travelers. But on the other side, no one is tracking their exits. With 350 million southern border crossers each year, DHS claims tracking exits may be logistically and financially unrealistic. Media liaisons from multiple DHS branches refused to be interviewed for this story.
For many years, I've been trying to get data on visa overstays for each country. to no avail so far.
Reporters aren't the only ones searching for answers. That's California Senator Dianne Feinstein at a congressional hearing last month. She posed her question to DHS Secretary Janet Napolitano, who promised more overstay data this year. The issue is a critical puzzle piece in the ongoing debate over immigration reform. Edward Alden of the Council on Foreign Relations has one suggestion. Send foreigners an email notice a couple weeks before their visa expires.
There's plenty of social science evidence that individuals are far more likely to follow the law if they think someone is watching them.
Without stricter enforcement, critics contend the problem of visa violators will simply continue. In El Paso, I'm Monica Ortiz Uribe.
The Navajo Nation is one of the most violent reservations in the country. According to FBI reports, over the last 5 years, more rapes were reported on the Navajo Nation than in San Diego, Detroit, and several other more populous U.S. cities. The tribe just opened one of four new jails, but there's not enough funding to staff them. From the Changing America desk in Flagstaff, Laurel Morales reports.
Monument Valley is known for its red sandstone buttes and spires. Now it's notorious for something else, crime. In one 16-hour period last October, a string of four unrelated murders exposed the tribe's dark side. Navajo tribal officials blame their meager economy and rampant substance abuse. They also lack the resources to fight crime. Phoenix, for example, has five times as many police officers for every 1,000 people. The FBI tries to take on the most violent crimes, but McDonald Rominger, who heads the Northern Arizona FBI office, says he needs more manpower to patrol an area the size of West Virginia.
And it's not uncommon for FBI agents or Navajo CIs to drive, you know, 600-700 miles in one day, just trying to accomplish something that would take a detective in San Francisco an hour to accomplish.
And when someone is arrested by a Navajo police officer, the offender may only be held for 8 hours because the tribe doesn't have enough jail space.
There's been a history of kind of a revolving door justice out there because of their lack of infrastructure and lack of jail space on the Navajo Nation, where individuals are arrested for serious offenses but then released shortly thereafter. Because there's no jail space out there.
Navajo leaders hope a new jail in Tuba City plus three more on the way will change that. Jail supervisor Robin Preston shows off his new state-of-the-art building about an hour north of Flagstaff.
This is our sally port. So whenever police officers are bringing inmates in, they'll notify our central at the gate, and then we will bring them through here.
Preston says up until recently, Tuba City had two Old West-style jail cells in a building that was falling apart. The recidivism rate was so high, Preston couldn't keep track of it.
We have inmates who know how to book themselves. If I have a new officer on the floor who's forgot to do a process, I have inmates who'll say, oh, you forgot to do this.
Once the tribe finds the money to staff it, the new 130-bed jail will handle inmates for much longer periods and provide job training and substance abuse counseling. Currently, the maximum tribal court sentence is only a year. The Navajo chief prosecutor says if the tribe mandates state bar certified judges and attorneys, it could impose longer sentences. The U.S. Attorney's Office in Arizona has 19 lawyers working only on Indian Country cases. Assistant U.S. Attorney Pat Schneider says that's more than any other office in the country.
You know, it's never enough. I'm always amazed at the volume of cases, and we could always do more.
And according to a 2010 government accountability study, his office declined to prosecute half of Indian Country cases.
And unfortunately, not every single one of these incidents can we prove all the time. And that's frustrating. Wish that every single one we could.
Ann Schneider's office is doing something to change that.
Why is it important to know who did it? You're concerned about safety, right? You don't want to send this person home to the same individual who beat the crap out of her or who raped her.
Assistant U.S. Attorney Diane Greer is training tribal officers and nurses on the Hopi Reservation. Evidence critical to an investigation is often lost because it wasn't collected or preserved properly. Plus, Greer says nurses and doctors often don't want to report a case because they think they're violating their HIPAA code of privacy.
We do not want these cases lost. We do not want these cases to fall through the cracks. And people say, well, what about this? And I said, we never heard about it. If we don't hear about it, we can't do anything about it. So err on the side of caution and let us know.
Plus, Greer says successfully prosecuting a domestic violence offender is the equivalent of homicide prevention. I'm Laurel Morales in Flagstaff.
There's still more Fronteras coming up. A new documentary spotlights a Tijuana man with a pair of unusual professions centered around one of the border city's biggest underground industries. That story coming up. Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. A documentary about one of Tijuana's biggest, albeit illegal, industries is making its way around film festivals across the globe. It spotlights a man with a pair of unusual professions. Joe Replegal from our Fronteras desk reports.
Meet Felix Rosales, a middle-aged, overweight producer and actor in Tijuana's prolific B-movie industry.
¿Qué pasó, muchachos? ¿Cómo están?
Here's Rosales in the 2007 film No Más Muertes en la Frontera, or No More Deaths on the Border. Rosales has played many roles in dozens of films, but the role he knows best is that of a pollero, a coyote, a guy who helps immigrants sneak into the U.S. illegally. Now, here's Rosales in his other profession, the one that pays the bills.
You drive one car, there's three people in the trunk.
I ain't even got no papers. I just got deported.
Deported?
Yeah,
but I don't care. So I have one idea for you.
You see, Rosales is a pollero, a real-life human smuggler. Here he's trying to recruit an English-speaking deportee to drive back into the U.S. with a fake ID and three people hidden in the trunk. The clip you just heard is a scene from a new documentary about his life, on and off screen, called Felix, Self-Fictions of a Smuggler. Director Adriana Trujillo uses the intersection of Rosales' two worlds, his real life and his fictional film clips, to open a rare window onto the large and lucrative underground world of immigrants smuggling in a border city. Trujillo's film starts with a scene from Rosales' smuggling life. He's driving a car at night through the streets of Tijuana. Rosales tells the camera person who's filming from the back seat that he wants to show the world the smuggling business isn't the way it's often painted. Then Rosales examines some fake California driver's licenses and a passport that he's buying from a contact off the street. Trujillo says while filming the documentary, she was often surprised that Rosales was okay with sharing details of his business that could potentially get him and others into a lot of trouble. She says she was constantly checking in with him, asking, "Are you sure we can record this?" Each time, Rosales said yes. In Trujillo's documentary, Rosales clearly sees himself as a hero, and he blames bad smugglers, the kind who leave their clients dying in the desert, for ruining the reputation of the entire profession. But in his fictional films, he sometimes plays the bad smuggler. Here's Rosales in a clip from the film Pesadilla Americana, or American Nightmare.
Estos hombres están muertos.
In the film, Rosales plays a smuggler taking a group of migrants across the border through the desert when two of them suddenly collapse and die. Rosales acknowledges the smuggling business has declined since the U.S. tightened border security. At one point in the documentary, he visits an aging smuggler who lives in a remote area of the border east of Tijuana. The man used to harbor border crossers on their way north, but now he doesn't have any clients, so he dedicates himself to making cheese. Still, Rosales says there will always be a smuggling business. It's just gotten more complicated and requires more creativity. And he wants to keep documenting it. As Trujillo and her team were finishing their documentary last year, she got a call from Rosales. He wanted her to come out and film a new smuggling technique he was using.
And we were like, oh, man, no, please, because we can't just record. O sea, we have to finish the film.
Trujillo's documentary is still touring festivals around the world. She hopes to make it available in DVD or streamed on the Internet in the near future. In San Diego, I'm Jill Replegal.
Now we're going to hear about another film, Philly Brown. It's a recent release that tells the story of the struggles of a Hispanic family in L.A. and a young artist's dream. Hollywood's not known for being sensitive in the telling of American Latino stories. More independent filmmakers are trying to fill that role. Starring in Philly Brown, Gina Rodriguez, Edward James Olmos, and Lou Diamond Phillips. Fronteras correspondent David Martin Davies spoke with Phillips about the movie and his career.
First of all, it's about a heartwarming story. It's a universal story, you know, of hope and redemption and family, and at the core of that is Gina Rodriguez's absolutely amazing breakout performance. I mean, this is going to put her on the map in such a big way.
Get your hands off my daughter.
It's going to take you coming together as a family. She's too far gone.
Mom!
I've done terrible things. God forgive me.
Girl, you're a little too hot right now, but I got to get on that mic. Because it runs in the family.
And it, you know, it also sort of illuminates the street level, you know, Latino rap scene in East L.A. and utilizes a lot of, you know, a lot of Chicano musicians who are the absolute real deal. You know, whether it's, you know, Chingo Bling or Baby Bash or everything that, you know, Pocos Pero Locos has been doing for 15 years. You know, and you take all of that and the wonderful performances in the film and then add on to that the unbelievable tragedy of losing Jenny Rivera. And suddenly I think everyone realizes that this is a very, very special project and one that needs to be seen and experienced, even for those people who just want to pay tribute to Jenny's amazing talent. And I mean, the sadness of it all, obviously, is that she turns in a breathtaking performance in this film. It was her first and only film, and sadly enough, really, really hints at what could have been.
What's it like for you to see her up there on the screen after working with her?
You know, I was in San Antonio just this past weekend, you know, and it was the first time that I had seen the film, you know, since Jenny passed, both Gina and I sitting there together. And, I mean, you know, when Jenny came up on screen, it was like being back at her memorial, you know, myself and Gina and Chrissy Fitt and Eddie Olmos and Michael and, you know, Yosef and Amir, a lot of the people involved with the film were there to support and to pay respect to, you know, to Jenny's, you know, family. And, I mean, literally, it was like a punch in the gut. She came on the screen and the tears just came to my eyes and, you know, I lost my breath. And, you know, it was a very visceral experience and, you know, I knew going in it was going to be.
People have made a lot of comparisons between her and Selena and, you know, both big crossover stars, popular on both sides of the border. And they were just about to become huge breakout stars, even bigger than that, and then came to a tragic end.
I mean, that is the real tragedy of it, is that Jenny was poised to, you know, really go through the roof. I mean, she's obviously much beloved, you know, in the Mexican-American and the Mexican communities, but this film and a deal that she had with ABC, I mean, they were all, you know, in line to create her as a brand, you know, not to be cynical, but along the lines of a Jennifer Lopez, you know, or obviously somebody who's a triple threat. And like I said, the randomness of this tragedy just came out of nowhere. And you know, it just makes you reflect on so many things. It makes you reflect on your own family, you know, on life and how we really need to be grateful for every minute because, you know, I mean, who can ever imagine something like this happening?
So you work with Edward James Olmos in the film Philly Brown. Of course, you also worked with him in this great story about Jaime Escalante, Stand and Deliver. So what was it like to work again with you two?
Well, I mean, really, I mean, it was a phone call from Michael saying, hey, I'm directing this film and, you know, Pops is producing it. And, you know, it was an almost immediate yes before I even read the script. You know, I adore Eddie. Not only has he been an inspiration as an actor, but I mean, as a mentor who gives back to the community, who continues to be an advocate, you know, for so many different causes and a real voice for the people. And, you know, to have worked with him and to have been shoulder to shoulder with him, you know, working, you know, for like El Rescate or Housing Now or marching with Cesar Chavez, you know, this was a man who showed me how to live your life and not just navigate Hollywood.
Simple. Anybody can do. Minus 2 plus 2 equals Nethead. Orale. Answer it. Come on. You know the answer. Minus 2 plus 2. Fill the hole. If I had that on my hands, I wouldn't raise it either. Oh. Really? Come on, a negative 2 plus 2 equals. Anybody can do it. Fill the hole. -2 plus 2 equals. Come on, just fill the hole. You can do it. You gonna let these burros laugh at you? -2 plus 2 equals.
Zero.
Zero. You're right.
Simple.
That's it.
And the film Stand and Deliver, still very important today, has a great message, still works today. People still need to see that movie.
Well, you know, it gets played in high schools every year. And the wonderful thing is we were just inducted last year into the National Registry of Film, you know, which is a huge honor and just shows, I think, the cultural significance and relevance of a film like that, and that it still resonates today. You know, and you were talking about, you know, this Latino wave, and it comes along every few years. The interesting thing is, you know, I made La Bamba, Eddie and I made Stand and Deliver together. He made Selena. Between the two of us, we have three of the highest grossing Latino themed films, you know, of all time. And I certainly hope that Philly Brown is yet another, you know, step along that journey, you know, of telling culturally based stories, but that are, you know, incredibly interwoven into the fabric of Americana.
Lou Diamond Phillips stars in the new film, Philly Brown, which tells the story of an up-and-coming Latina rapper who faces personal and family struggles on her journey. You've been listening to Fronteras, a Corporation for Public Broadcasting-funded journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KNAU Flagstaff, KNBR Las Vegas, KRWG Las Cruces, KUAZ Tucson, and KSTX San Antonio. Fronteras is online at fronterasdesk.org. We're also on Facebook. We invite you to join the conversations. And for headlines and updates, follow us on Twitter. Our handle is fronterasdesk. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. The theme music was composed by Charanga Kekwa. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.